You're listening to the weekend podcast of Palm Valley Church. We hope this message encourages you in your walk with Christ.
Also this weekend, it's just something special. We've got a guest speaker with us. And if you've been a part of Palm Valley Church for some time, he'll be no stranger to you. But we are honored to have Joe Beam with us this weekend. And his wife, Alice, which always makes you look better, Joe. She's with him. And this past week, they celebrated, or 2 weeks ago, they celebrated 49 years of marriage. Yeah, and that's really what they've dedicated their life, their ministry to. They work with an organization called MarriageHelper.com and provide resources for marriages, for families. They do workshops twice a month in Nashville where they reside for couples that are really struggling to make things work, and they provide tools of communication and reestablishing trust, and have had just an amazing God-blessed amount of success in what they do there. He's written a number of books. We've got 4 or 5 in the lobby. There's a little store outside if you're interested in purchasing those on the way out. But more than all that, Joe, over the past 8 years to our church, has just really become a dear friend. He's a trusted friend of Rick and myself. We love having him, and I enjoy spending time with him every time he comes. So would you join me in welcoming Joe Beam as he comes to share with us?
It is true that we first married 49 years ago, but we married at age 3. That's what you know. Happy Father's Day, Palm Valley Church. It is, and this is no exaggeration or hyperbole, it is the highlight of my year when I get to come speak for the Palm Valley Church, the most awesome church on this country. Happy Father's Day to you men who have biologically fathered children. Happy Father's Day to you men who have stepped in and become stepfathers to children. Happy Father's Day to you men who have adopted children who needed a good dad. Happy Father's Day to you. And happy Father's Day to the rest of the men. If you have not biologically fathered a child, haven't had a chance to be the stepfather or adopted father, but you have been a father in the faith. By that I mean you have mentored men, women, boys, girls, and helped them grow in the Lord. You are a father as well, you understand? And so to all you fathers, happy Father's Day. And remember that even though in America we choose one day a year to honor fathers, God says you honor your father and your mother, and that means every day. And sometimes we just need to be telling them that. I mean, Rick and Gerald have been working out of Proverbs. Let me just show you a passage in Proverbs. It's in chapter 4. We're going to read verses 3 through 5. And this is what Solomon says about his dad. For I too was a son to my father, still tender and cherished by my mother. Then he taught me, and he said to me, take hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands, and you will live. Get wisdom and understanding. Do not forget my words or turn away from them. You see, what's he doing? He's telling us that when he was so young, very, very young, his father started teaching him. His father was, of course, King David. And if you've read your Bibles, you know that King David was a very good man who sometimes was not such a good man. There were things that he would do that I'm quite convinced, based on what he wrote in the book of Psalms, he wished that he hadn't done. Some of those things had been done before Solomon was born, but as people are, I'm sure that people made sure he knew about it. Other things he did after Solomon was born, and even though his dad was not a perfect man, his dad was a good man. Even though his dad had done some dastardly things, his dad also did some very faithful things. And he's saying here, I want you to know that my dad's words, my father's words, gave me life. Now, the Father in heaven gives words that give life, but the Father we have on earth does as well. You say, what do you mean? Because he taught me how to live. He taught me how to live. Now, he goes in a few verses later, down to verse 10, and he starts talking as a father. And he says there, listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I instruct you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. Now, we're about to look at some of the Proverbs where He would tell what that means. But I want you to key on a couple of words there. He said, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to open my mouth and give you the information that you need to have. But he said, I'm also going to lead you. So what do you mean? I'm currently reading a book about General Patton from World War II. And it described very vividly a particular battle that took place just before we were crossing the Rhine to go into Germany in that World War II, where that our soldiers under his command had attacked a well-fortified position by the German soldiers, and it turned out to be an extremely gruesome battle. And because of the crossfires that the German forces had set up, our men who had been wounded and fallen on the battlefield, the ones who were not yet dead, were in extreme pain. Some were dying, some were wounded in pain, but nobody could rescue them because of the crossfire. And so our troops listened to those men screaming in pain. And it talked about how many of those young men were crying out for their mother. Now stay with me. I've never been in that kind of battle. I have read about those kinds of battles. And across the accounts, no matter which war it might have been, you'll hear again and again that certain men, when they were facing death, when they were wounded and knew it was about to be the end, would cry out for their mothers. And so the question, as I was reading this the other day, came into my mind, why weren't any of them crying out for their fathers? Now, I don't have a definitive answer for that, but I have an idea, and I think it makes sense. Well, you see, to begin with, first of all, when we entered this world, we came from my mother's womb. If that's where our life started, I can see there kind of being symbolic about that's who I want to cling to when my life is ending. But I think even beyond that, we tend to see our mothers as sources of comfort. Now, I say tend, you understand it can vary with individuals, but we tend to see our mothers as sources of comfort, where we tend to see our fathers as leaders, guides. Now, that's not to say that women, mothers, don't lead and guide. They most certainly do. And it does not mean that fathers don't comfort. They most certainly do. But when you look at the roles and the way we tend to respond to them, it tends to be our mothers we want to cling to when I'm scared, hold me. And it's our fathers we tend to look to when it's like, I'm not sure what to do here. Guide me. Tell me what should happen next. My father died 16 years ago. When he was 83 years old, I still miss him. My father was also an imperfect man, because the only perfect father that's ever lived or ever existed is the father that's in heaven, right? Every other father is flawed, just like every one of us is flawed. You do understand that, right? Everybody in this room is messed up. Did you know that? Everybody. Except those standing here. Everybody. We're all messed up. But even though my father was like everybody else, he was flawed, and I could tell you about his weaknesses if I wished, I still miss his counsel. And in my adult life, even though I carried some pain from when I was young, my dad had some struggles with alcohol back then. He got over them eventually, but I remember those situations. And yet throughout my adult life, there were times when I just picked up the phone and called, what do you think about this? What should I do about that? Even when it was something that I knew he had no experience with, and sometimes I wouldn't take his advice because I thought he really doesn't understand it, that was still the voice I wanted to hear. Listen to me, hear me, lead me, guide me. And that's what he's saying here. Now, gentlemen, understand this. As fathers, whether we're the biological father, stepfather, adopted father, or father in the faith, as fathers, not only are we going to teach them, but we're going to guide them. Now, that means, my brothers, if we're going to lead, then we have to live. You understand, it's not just do what I say, no matter what I do. It's I do what I say, but I'm also going to demonstrate it for you as best I can in my life, which puts a great responsibility upon us. But you understand, our children did not ask to be born, right? Not a single one of us got a telegram from off there somewhere saying, hey, how about making me? It didn't happen. And so fathers and mothers, we're the ones who brought these people into the world. Therefore, they don't owe us. We owe them. And by being their parents, there are certain obligations that we have. Okay, teach, yes, but live it as well. So what kind of things would the father then teach? Well, he goes on to say in the next verse, verse 14, We teach them to do what's right. What he says, do not set foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evildoers. And I really wish there were more parents teaching their kids that more clearly right now. What do you think? Is it the role of the father? Well, the role of the mother as well. But you understand that when you go through the Bible talking about what happens in the families, most often it's the father's the teacher that's referred to, that we bring them up in the way they should go, those kinds of things. You follow? You see, why is that so essential? Because if we're any of those kinds of forefathers, well, like this. Several years ago in Little Rock, Arkansas, how they pulled this off, I still don't know. But the Bloods and the Crips, which started in L.A., have branches around America. And they have branches in Little Rock, Arkansas. There was a big meeting of social workers that had come together from around America, and somebody knew both these guys who were the leaders of those two gangs in Little Rock and somehow convinced them to come on the same stage. Now, they sit far apart, one over there and one over there, because they're mortal enemies. And then they allowed the social workers to ask these guys questions. One of my friends was sitting in that audience. She said, you should have heard it, Joe. One of us stood up and said, what would it take to do away with you? Not meaning to eliminate those individuals, you understand, but to do away with these gangs. What would it take to do away with your gangs? And one of those two guys, I've long since forgotten which, one of those two guys responded and said, give me a better family than this. This is the only family I've got. And I thought that makes all the sense in the world. People want to belong. They want somebody to lead. They want somebody to guide. And if there's not a good, strong man, now I'm not putting down women, and I know that some of you women are single moms, and I'm not trying to say that you're not doing an amazing job, because I'm sure you are. But we know the influence when there's a strong man who's not just teaching the way, but as best a flawed human can, is living the way. And that's what these people are looking for. Everybody wants that. I want to be part of that family. And he's saying here, okay, then dads, whichever father you are, dads, teach it, live it, tell them to not do the bad stuff. And then in the next verse, he says this, my son, it's actually skipping down to verse 20, my son, pay attention to what I say, turn your ear to my words, do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to one's whole body. So what's he teaching him? Son, the things I teach you about, I want you to meditate on. I want you to put them in your thoughts. Why is that so important? Because as a man thinks, so is he. The things we think about. When I was learning how to drive, way back in the late 1800s, when I was learning how to drive, the teacher said, you'll drive where you look. Have you ever noticed that? You're driving along and you start paying attention over there, and all of a sudden, which direction are you heading? You drive where you look. You go where you think. So rather than thinking about how much money you want to make, rather than thinking about some lust you want to satisfy, rather than thinking about how famous you want to be, son, daughter, my child, think about the good, the righteous, the holy. I'll be teaching you, but I want you to meditate on it. And Paul would say the same thing in the New Testament about whatever those things are, you think on those. Now, I'm not going to elaborate more on that because Pastor Gerald preached on that last Sunday, and I'm sure he explained it tremendously, and I don't need to try to add to that. But remember that what we think about is important. And then he gets to that next verse, and he says, I thought I read that, but apparently I didn't. By the way, when you get to a certain age, you don't know what you did 3 minutes ago. Anybody remember that? Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. The heart means different things in different contexts, but here it refers a lot to the way you think and the way you feel. So it's the next verse I want to go to here. In verse 24, he says this, keep your mouth free of perversity, keep corrupt talk from your lips. You say, what does it mean? It's a continuation of what he just said. The way we talk tells about what we're thinking about. Does it not? So don't talk about evil things, so you won't be thinking about evil things. Now, we can say a lot about that, but again, Pastor Gerald covered that. So I want to go to the next point, which is this. And in verse 25, he says, let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. You say, is he referring to driving again? No. That's just an illustration we use in our day and time. Basically, what it says is what people focus their lives on that they tend to accomplish. Would you think that's right? Have you seen anyone who's been particularly successful in his or her field that didn't focus on it? I guess what I'm trying to say is, it's what's important to me. It's what I'm planning for. It's what I'm driving for that determines how I act and what I do. I get to meet a lot of famous people on occasions, which is kind of a fun thing. And a few years ago, I met a very famous rapper. Now, I'm not going to tell you who he was, okay? Because when you hear the end of the story, you'll understand. But a very famous rap artist. I will tell you this, though. He did try to teach me how to rap. And I said, look at me. But he told me about the largest audience he had performed before, which was 100,000 people. He performed for them when he was with Nelson Mandela. He told me about how much money he made a week, which was an astronomical amount of money he made a week. He told me about a movie that he had been in and how much fun it was. And I'm listening to that conversation thinking, this is so cool. And he'd been extremely successful because he focused his whole life on it. Are you following what I'm saying? Then it turns out. We just kept talking, and he started telling me about how he had a son on one coast that he never got to see, a son on another coast, the other coast that he never got to see, and how that he had little to no influence on their lives whatsoever, and that he had become very successful because that was what he focused his eyes on. But in the process, had lost the people that he loved. You say, that's negative. It is. So let me give it on a positive side. One of my friends, he's with Jesus now. When it comes to business, he was the most successful man I ever knew. He worked alongside a guy that you may never have heard of called Armin Hammer. If I remember that name, not the baking soda, that's something totally different. Armin Hammer was the head of Occidental Petroleum, very wealthy man, did deals in China and Russia, etc., as if that's important. But my friend worked with him. My friend lived in Montgomery, Alabama, and based everything out of there. And finally, Dr. Hammer called him one day and said, you've proven you can play ball with the big boys. So you're moving to L.A. My friend Ed, this man, had a different focus of his life. Now, he talked really Alabama Southern. Have you heard Alabama Southern? And there's two different kinds of Alabama Southern, and one is what we call aristocratic Alabama Southern. And he spoke aristocratic. And he said, Dr. Hammer, thank you for the offer, but I'm staying right here in Montgomery. And Dr. Hammer said it was not an offer, it was a command, which my friend said, I quit. He said, what? Well, see, my mama lives here. My wife and my children live here, and they're very much involved in our church, very much involved in the community. My friends live here. I'm soon to have grandchildren. They live here. None of them live in L.A. I'm staying here. Dr. Hammer pointed out how many millions of dollars he would lose if he didn't move. He pointed out to Dr. Hammer he would not trade his child or his grandchild for the whole amount of money in the whole world. He would stay right where he was because that's where he wanted to be. And Hammer fired him. Actually, technically, he quit, but you understand the relationship stopped. Yet Hammer continued to respect him to the end of both their lives. He said, what's your point here? If I'm going to be a good dad, I think I need to think in terms of what's coming. What is the most important thing to me? What is it that I'm living for? Am I focused on making more money? Am I focused on becoming more famous? Am I focused on building whatever it might be, buying more land? I mean, whatever it might be. And when you really get down to the end of it, I mean like the end of life, what is it that you accomplish? So if we dads are going to be the dads that God models for us, the dad that the Bible talks about, then it's quite all right to be successful in whatever it is that you do. But it doesn't make any difference if you make millions of dollars or if you make just a handful of dollars. In one of our workshops, we do a thing on Saturday afternoon where people bring a show and tell. It's like, this is something that represents my childhood, and then they tell why. You understand that some of those stories are sad, but some of those stories are awesome. Like a guy who will say, I'd bring a baseball bat and a glove. Okay, what does that represent about your childhood? My dad was a blue-collar worker, never made very much money. He worked hard. When he came home, he was always tired. But he didn't grab a beer and watch the TV. He grabbed a glove and we went into the yard. And we played catch. Sometimes we'd go to the field and he'd pitch and let me hit. And all the time, not only was he teaching me baseball, but we were talking about life. About this and that and the other kind of thing. And I wouldn't take anything for what my dad did for me. and the fact that he spent time for me. And we hear those stories about moms too, you understand? But with the dads, it's like I was crucial to his life. He focused on me and my future. So it makes no difference if you're blue collar or if you're making millions. It makes no difference if you're famous or if nobody will know your name whatsoever. It all becomes, he says here, keep your eyes straight ahead. Toward what? Toward what's important. That's what. That's what's crucial to us. And if you think about that, look at this verse out of a different chapter in Proverbs. It's in chapter 17, it's verse 6. It says, children's children are a crown to the aged, and parents are the pride of their children. You say, what? What does that mean, and why does it put here? I've been around for a while, and in life, have experienced many different things. I have been wealthy. Notice that was past tense. I have been wealthy. I have been very poor. I mean, to the point that I had no place to live and slept in the back seat of my car. And the only reason I had a car to sleep in was because they didn't know where I was to come get it and repossess it. So I have been wealthy. I have been completely broke. I've been famous back many years ago when in the Southeast, if I were to speak, thousands of people would show up because I was famous. I've also been, I noticed that was also past tense. Did you hear that? I have been infamous by some of the decisions I made that destroyed my first marriage to that wonderful woman over there. You see, week before last, 49 years from our first marriage, and then last week, 31 years of our second marriage, because there's a 3-year gap in there when I divorced and left her and my children. You're thinking, why did she marry you twice? Apparently, she committed some great sin and God decided to punish her twice. That's all I can figure. So I've also been infamous where that I wouldn't draw a crowd of thousands of people to hear me to speak. Nobody would walk across the street to hear me speak. And if my name were brought up at all, it was to talk about how wicked and evil I had become. So, wealthy, completely broke. Famous, infamous. You say, so what's your goal now? I've learned that being famous doesn't make you happy, nor being infamous. I've learned that being wealthy doesn't make you happy, nor does being poor. That what really matters, well, that verse we just read has a lot to do with it. It talks about your children's children. You say, what do you mean? Surely you understand that for most of us, as a matter of fact, probably all of us, it won't be that many years till no one will know you lived. I mean, I teach college students as well as adjunct faculty in the psychology department at a university, and every year I have to keep changing my illustrations in my psychology classes because the kids don't know the names of the famous people. I mean, seriously, I'll talk about some famous person and they'll go, who's that? It happened last night. It was with Gerald and Carissa and their daughters, and I was telling them some of the famous people that lived in Nashville, and they kept looking and going, never heard of them. And these are people like, oh, wait a minute, what about so-and-so? It got funny after a while. They hadn't heard of any of them, but it just proves the point that even no matter how famous or rich or whatever you might be, it won't be that long until nobody knows that you lived. So what's important? How much money you left? How famous you were. You see, the only real legacy I, you, or anybody else can leave is what we teach our children. Oh, yeah. And what they teach their children and on down the line, right? And that's why it's saying your children's children. We have grandkids, and it's awesome. We love them. Another of our daughters is adopting 2 little kids out of India. They're going to be awesome, too. And I can't wait till they become teenagers and sound like us instead of Indians. They'll say, hey, we're going to the store. Y'all want to go? You reckon there's going to be anything there? I'm fixing to leave. And it's going to be so cool because you'll say, that doesn't sound right coming out of those people. Right? But it's whatever they too will learn, and their children will learn, and their children. It's your children's children. So what are you focused on? The future, changing the world. And you don't understand that the good you teach, that you also demonstrate as best you can, that your kids live. You don't know what some of those grandkids or great-grandkids or further down the line will do to change the world and won't even remember who great-great-great-granddaddy was. But it's because of the way he lived and what he taught that they are able to accomplish what they accomplish. Do you understand that? So he's telling us, all right, guys, I know you're not perfect. You're going to mess it up occasionally. But do the best you can. Keep your eyes straight on. Straight on what? Straight on what's important. I mean, I like having money, but it doesn't matter if I don't have any because I've got a wife and daughters that love me. It was kind of fun being famous, but if I never am again, that's okay because I have a wife and daughters that love me. Are you following me? Okay, now I'm going to skip. Well, let's just read this text first, very quick. He says, don't turn to the right or the left. In other words, once you get on that path, don't let things pull you off. All right, let me be just a little negative here. Brothers, hear me. He goes on in the next chapter, the next two chapters, talk about that you don't go after other women. You stay with your wife. He talks about how that you don't go chasing the things that are not really important when it comes to the end of life. I did wind up in the ER. I did wind up finding intensive care from an overdose back in those wicked days. They actually assembled the people outside my room. The doctor told me we don't normally do that, but those people are the code blue team there because we expect your heart to stop any second. And I realized I was probably about to die. And I didn't think about how much money I had made or how much money I'd lost. I didn't think about the size of any alleys I'd spoken for or how people talked badly about me now. None of those things were important to me when I thought my next breath might be my last. It was my kids. What I'd done to them. My brothers, it's worth putting things back together. It's worth calling my wife and saying, I hurt you badly, but could you consider the possibility of taking me back? And she knows this. It wasn't at that point because I'd fallen in love with her again. It was at that point I'd come to my responsibility as a father. And I told her that. We'll learn how to love each other again, but I'm not going to lie to you. I want to come back because it's the right thing to do for my children. She accepted that. She accepted me. Now, we did figure it out. We did learn how to be in love with each other again. I love her madly. I really do. I love her when she's mad at me, too. But it was a decision about being the dad I'm supposed to be. Now, that doesn't make me perfect. Surely you figured out I'm more messed up than anybody in the room. But my brothers, are you getting the point? There is no woman worth my children. There is no amount of money worth my children. There's no amount of fame worth my children. And if I'm going to leave a legacy that changes the world, it's going to be what I lead my kids in. So if you need to help to straighten it out, you talk to the staff here and they'll help you get the right help. If you just need somebody to pray for you, they'll do that too. But do you hear me? Gentlemen, we're important in the lives of our children. Do you hear me? So Pastor Rick is in Africa. He sent me an email and talking about this service. And he talked about how wonderful his mom is, said all kinds of glowing accolades about his wife, his mother, that is. And then he said, but whenever my dad walked in the room, something changed. And he talked about the tremendous effect his father's had on his life. He said, somehow, Joe, if you can just help communicate that to my brothers in the Palm Valley Church. He said, I guess you could sum it up in these two words. Man up. Man up. Now you're thinking, why didn't you just say those two words and sit down? Maybe I should have. Bow with me, please. Father, thank you for your love. Thank you for your mercy. Father, thank you for mothers and all they mean. Father, thank you for fathers and all they mean. You know we mess things up. Thank you for giving us stories about men like David who messed up and yet still his son said wonderful things about him. Father, help us get on the straight path. Show us a way to do the right thing. Give us strength and courage. And Father, focus us on what really is important as fathers. In the name of Jesus.
We hope you enjoyed this message today. Don't miss out on next week's teaching. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and keep up to date with what's happening at palmvalleychurch.com.